Zeit Gang, you like to watch new stuff, right? I mean, who doesn't? I do. Well, go to Hulu and see what's new, because Hulu has new stuff all the time, like Vanderpump Villa, the new docudrama starring Lisa Vanderpump, where first-class luxury meets world-class drama, a new season of The Kardashians starring The Kardashians, of course, and Grand Cayman, Secrets in Paradise, the sizzling new reality show set in the tropical Caribbean. It's streaming now, and it's waiting for you on Hulu.
Enjoy all your favorite sports like never before at BetMGM. Signing up and playing is so easy. Simply sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. When you register with BetMGM, you can get instant access to a variety of parlay selection features, live betting options, and the best daily promotions in the business. And with BetMGM at your fingertips, every play and every game matter more than ever. Place your moneyline, prop, and parlay bets with a king of sportsbooks today. Sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. That's right, up to $1,500. Again, sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. BetMGM and GameSense remind you to play responsibly. 21 plus and present in Ohio, subject to eligibility requirements. Rewards are non-withdrawable bonus bets that expire in 7 days. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER in partnership with MGM Northfield Park. That's 1-800-GAMBLER.
Here's something you might not know about wireless. Sometimes what you see isn't what you get. But with Visible, what you see is what you get. Switch to Visible, the wireless company that makes wireless visible. Get a one-line plan with unlimited 5G data powered by Verizon. Just $25 per month, taxes and fees included. Switch now at Visible.com. Monthly rate on the Visible plan. For data management practices and additional terms, visit Visible.com.
Hello, the internet, and welcome to this episode of the Weekly Zeitgeist. These are some of our favorite segments from this week, all edited together into one nonstop infotainment laugh extravaganza. So without further ado, here is the Weekly Zeitgeist.
Miles, we are thrilled to be joined in our third seat by a senior reporter covering racial equity at the Center for Public Integrity. She's been a Fulbright Fellow, a fellow with the International Women's Media Foundation, an Innovations in Food and Agriculture Fellow with the National Press Foundation, and she's the host of the third season of The Heist, which is incredible. Focuses on the long documented history of government discrimination against Black farmers. Please welcome to the show, April Simpson!
April! Welcome.
Thanks. I'm really glad to be here.
Happy Halloween.
Happy Halloween.
Do you celebrate?
I don't, but I have a daughter now and she will be.
Oh, yeah. Okay. Congratulations. How old?
Thanks. 6 months.
Oh, okay. Wow. So I have a 9-month-old and we're doing the same thing. And part the whole time I was really conflicted about costumes because I'm like, this child is not selecting this costume, and we're now reducing it to a live action doll. But I mean, if seeing him in a Woody costume didn't bring a tear to my eye, you know, I don't know what will. Yeah, that was the one that was very flammable, by the way, that I was bringing.
Woody? Okay.
Dude, this Woody costume, that was the one that was like reeking of like petroleum. I'm pretty sure it's like the most synthetic fabrics that have ever been made. So, yeah. So how is your daughter liking the first Halloween?
Well, first, congrats to you too.
Oh, thank you. Thank you.
I think he's going to love it. He's going to be a butterfly.
Wow.
I thought could be fun.
Yeah.
But I think, you know, babies bring so much joy to other people. So that's kind of the fun of it too.
Yeah, that is true, because there's no one sees a cute baby dressed up and goes like, that's so trite.
Like, you know, like, nice try.
Yeah, what a contrived outfit this is. It's always like, oh, like I remember I went somewhere else and someone was like, there's a baby here dressed like Toy Story. And I was like, I guess. Yeah, we'll take that.
Oh, that's so cute. Amazing. Those sound amazing. Congratulations to you both. And congratulations to every living human with a beating heart that runs into you on Halloween and gets to see your gorgeous children and their amazing Halloween costumes.
Absolutely.
Thank you.
What is something from your search history?
Math jokes.
Math jokes.
I looked up math jokes.
What's a math, like, hit me with one.
Okay. The I says to the pie, be rational.
Why? The I says to the pie, be rational.
And yeah, the pie no, I'm not says get back, that one. Oh, okay. The pie says back, get real.
This is rational numbers.
Oh, come on. You know the imaginary number I?
Okay. I'm love that math joke.
There's one of a okay, Sammy O'Bain has better math jokes than the ones I found on the internet, but I was looking up math joke cartoons.
Wait, what got you onto math jokes?
Somebody told me that they don't like comedy, they just like math.
What?
Yeah, okay. It was like some guy was like negging me in the grocery store line. I don't know.
Wait,
why.
What? Were you doing like a type five about grocery lines or something?
I mean, okay, let's be real. I'm a out of commission comedian right now.
Right.
Performing right now, which means that I'm performing everywhere.
Everywhere. Yeah, right. Yeah. I get that.
Like, I'm sorry, world. That's just what happens.
That was, yeah.
Just trying jokes out on everybody.
Wait, so you ask someone randomly in line, you like, hey, like, you want to hear a joke?
basically, that's what I'm doing now. I yeah. just, like, I say a dumb, funny thing, like, oh, guess this line's gonna just keep going, and I don't
is,
get,
is
like,
that a geometry?
Ha.
Is that a geometry joke?
No, it gets there, you know, like, so oh, okay. then I just, yeah, like, yeah. keep at it, you know, just right. double down, like, it's just wrapping around corners, all right. the corners. I'm sure there's a math joke to plug in here.
Yeah. Like, well, lines do so famously keep going, you yeah. know? And in geometry, they just keep going and going. Right.
And pie goes and goes forever. And the guy was like, I like math, just not jokes. And I was like, What the
fuck are you talking about, man?
Yeah, what the fuck? I don't know if that's
the person
binary,
you know, or they were just the person like right
Did
in front of
you. Did I get heckled?
Yeah.
Is he
yeah.
telling me to stop making nice?
I just don't. I love that binary, though. It's math yeah. or humor. Pick one. It's like, I don't know. But I guess why wasn't the geometry teacher at school? Because she sprained her ankle?
That's,
you like
that's a
that?
Good one.
You like that guy? And he's like crying. It's so he's like, oh, fuck. Ah, you write this that? Moment, you write that?
This moment has changed me.
Right. I love it. I like math. Okay, thanks.
Like was
math,
was he like jokes. Was he my 7-year-old son? That's like the sort of thing my 7-year-old son would say to me. Like, I try and make him laugh, and he's like, "I like math, Dad." Okay,
ooh,
not jokes.
That's kind of fucked up. That's actually probably the most scathing response you could give. Where you're like, honestly, I like math better than whatever the fuck this is.
I know.
Yeah.
I was like, Matt, come on, man. I've had a baby. I'm struggling.
Please, man. I haven't gone up in like months.
Help me. Warm up a little.
And then you just burst into tears.
And he's like, fuck, I'm sorry, okay? I didn't know. I fuck what the fuck?
That's when I dropped the forklift on him.
Yeah, yeah,
that's
exactly.
Right. Hey, Blake.
Hmm.
Why don't you tell us something that you think is overrated?
Yeah, tough guy. So I had here written down the Heat, and I'm like, are we talking about Pat Riley? But of course not. I'm talking about the Heat in your house, where I, for years, thought that Heat cost about $4.50 per minute to run. So I was like in gas money on your gas bill. So, and I yeah. lived in LA for forever, so I would never, yeah. I would be like, let's just throw on sweatshirts or a coat. And then I started living with my now wife, and she was like, this isn't the right way to live. Right. And so then I started turning it on.
And you're also living on the East Coast, like yeah. in
it was 30 degrees this morning.
Different temperatures. Yeah.
Correct. And when we turn it on, if you haven't used the Heat in a while, there's generally a lot of like dust and I don't know, mouse bones in there. And I'm allergic to some of that. So
allergic to mouse
like,
bones.
I don't, famously. Yeah, I'm, it's not mice is a full, you know, out of the garage mouse is fine, but it's bones. Yeah.
Smoked a it's whole a, mouse this morning.
I did. Yeah, yeah. this is.
Came right
yeah,
off the bone.
And a full mouse. And yeah, no, it generally gives me allergies. So I just think it's over. I like to bundle up. I prefer a blanket.
and like a nice comfy hoodie.
In home?
Yeah, I do. And which, yeah, and I'm right. I was about to say, I realize that's strange. It's not strange. It's
Blake, will you do me a favor?
Go ahead.
Right now? Will you?
Wait, yeah, I'm right.
Okay,
I'm,
no, I'm is right. The Wait. Is the heat on right now at your place?
No, no, it can't be.
And you said it was 30 degrees this morning?
Yeah, but it's gone up to about 49.
Okay. Will you touch the tip of your nose and tell me if that's warm or cold right now?
I can't feel it. I can't even tell if I'm feeling
it. Just
it
broke
right
off.
Now.
Wait, fuck. That's like
a snowman.
That's always when I know the house is too cold, is when the tip of my nose gets cold. I'm like, nah, I don't need to have all this shit on. But it's funny. As someone who loves to wear like warm, like cold weather clothing, just for some reason when I get in my house, I'm like, do I need to wear a parka on my couch? I don't know. But hey, teach their own.
When I was a kid, we grew up like, never wanted for anything, you know, grew up, my dad had a good job, and I'm saying this because of what I'm about to say.
We know. Take those silver spoons out of your mouth real quick. I can't hear you.
I can't. They're actually welded to my teeth. My teeth, instead of fillings, I have silver spoons melted down
crafted.
And formed into molars. And we just, I slept like in a converted attic, which had air conditioning, but no heat. So when I would come home from college, winter break, I would sleep in a coat.
And, holy shit.
You know what? That's probably why I don't give a shit about heat, because I did it when I was young. I was able to sleep in a coat. Why can't the woman I love more than anything on earth suffer along with me? Yeah, no, she'll figure
Your
it out.
Your parents didn't tell many people about you, huh? They just kind of kept you up in that attic?
No, no.
Didn't want anybody to know? Yeah.
It was, they wouldn't come up until my plates started piling up outside the door that they'd feed me. Yeah. The little slot they'd,
or if we had company over and they would blindfold me and give me my happy juice.
Yes, yes. And I met the broom once.
Damn.
The broom that they'd use to hit the ceiling and say, sorry, we have rats, every time I'd sneeze or something.
We have rats.
The mice bones are rattling again up there. Hence your mice bone.
So who turned on the heat?
you got allergic to mice bones because they were your only friends for so long. But
they were, you know, they were also,
that doesn't really
they
make
were
sense
also
from a physiological standpoint.
It's fine.
No, it does. Sometimes. It does. The mental state, and also if I'd like break a bone trying to escape, I would make a splint out of their bones.
Yeah.
Too weird.
Just bones supporting bones.
Why not, man?
Just bones.
Sometimes it
bones.
Be your
we
bones.
Gotta come together.
You know?
Thank you. Mm-hmm. Exactly.
What's something you think is underrated?
Okay. Two things. Stovetop espresso, which I think is just like the percolators. They're just great.
Oh, that metal thing, right?
Yeah, yeah, the metal thing.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
I think it's better than French press. I think it's better than a pour over. You know, it might not be better than like a 100-year-old French machine or something, but sure. I think it's the best you could do, you know? And then the other thing I like that I think is underrated are the cheapy headphones that you get from flight attendants on flights, because they always come in handy at the exact time when you can't find your other shit.
Oh,
it's like,
got it.
You're like, wait a minute. I have one of these in my purse. And then you need it and you have it. And those are my two.
Yeah. I'm like such a headphone nerd. Like, I'm like, I got my own cans. Thank you so much. The fidelity is way too fucked up for my ears. But hey, maybe my mother would like it because she doesn't care about how shit sounds. But yeah, it is. I never thought of it as like sort of like having like a package of Kleenex or something too, where you're like, oh, headphones. Wait, I know I have a pile of them from every flight I go on.
Exactly.
Now I will be less stuck up and I will accept them gleefully.
You just take them as your backup.
Yeah. Right, right.
Your backup.
Some of them break like 1.5 uses into a life cycle, but sometimes like that's not a rule. And sometimes they'll last you a year, you know? They'll just be, you get the real ones that are able to kind of stick together. I thought Stovetop Espresso was the Stovetop Stuffing brand expanding into the world of espresso. So I'm very glad to hear that that's not what's happening.
Just add water to like the powder. Like, there it is. And microwave it.
Oh,
good.
My God. Yeah. You thought, I'm Ethiopian. I would never do
I know,
that.
I was
going to
say.
You know?
Serious about the coffee.
That's where my American brain went.
Mm, of course. Of course. Yeah. Of course.
So it probably comes in a box, the stovetop espresso.
It's like a... You,
what yeah, aisle is you, that in?
Where do I find that? All right. Well, let's take a quick break and yep. we'll come back and talk about presidents creating foreign policy based on some movies they just saw.
You like to watch new stuff, right, Zygang? I know I do. Well, go to Hulu and see what's new. Because Hulu has new stuff all the time, like Vanderpump Villa, the new docudrama starring Lisa Vanderpump. Join Lisa and her hand-selected staff at Chateau Rosabelle, a glamorous estate in the French countryside, as they live, work, and play together 24/7. Vanderpump Villa is where first-class luxury meets world-class drama. And don't miss the new season of The Kardashians, starring The Kardashians, of course. And season 5 promises new horizons for the entire Kardashian clan. And if you're looking for steamy streams, check out Grand Cayman Secrets in Paradise, the sizzling new reality show set on the tropical Caribbean island of Grand Cayman, where the rich come to play. But be warned, it's a small island. And secrets don't stay secret for long. So come check out what's new on Hulu this month. It's streaming now, and it's waiting for you on Hulu.
Enjoy all your favorite sports like never before at BetMGM. Signing up and playing is so easy. Simply sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. When you register with BetMGM, you can get instant access to a variety of parlay selection features, live betting options, and the best daily promotions in the business. And with BetMGM at your fingertips, every play and every game matter more than ever. Place your moneyline, prop, and parlay bets with a king of sportsbooks today. Sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. That's right, up to $1,500. Again, sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. BetMGM and GameSense remind you to play responsibly. 21 plus and present in Ohio, subject to eligibility requirements. Rewards are non-withdrawable bonus bets that expire in 7 days. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER in partnership with MGM Northfield Park. That's 1-800-GAMBLER.
Hey, here's something you might not know about wireless. Sometimes what you see isn't what you get. But with Visible, what you see is what you get. Switch to Visible, the wireless company that makes wireless visible. Get a one-line plan with unlimited 5G data powered by Verizon, just $25 per month, taxes and fees included. Visible is the wireless company that makes wireless visible. No hidden fees, no really. Save on wireless with unlimited 5G data powered by Verizon. You don't need more than one line of wireless to save. Just switch to Visible at Visible.com. Save on wireless without the hassle. Switch to Visible today and save at Visible.com. Monthly rate on the Visible plan. For data management practices and additional terms, visit Visible.com. And we're back.
We're back.
And I guess to kick us off, I'd just be curious to hear a little bit more about your background, April. What kind of stories did you cover prior to this? How do you get to this story? Because I personally hear agriculture and my brain, it doesn't turn off, but it assumes that's somebody else's story to pay attention to. But then this one was so good. And it seems like, based on some of your credentials, that agriculture is kind of a sweet spot for you?
Yeah, I'd say I almost fell into it because at my job prior to coming to Center for Public Integrity, I covered rural issues and really had the opportunity to shape that beat as I saw fit. Mm. And, you know, at that time, Trump was president. There were like subsidies basically that were given to farmers when there was a trade war with China.
Right.
To help keep them on their feed. And there was, you know, investigative reporting that showed most of that money, nearly all of that money, went to white farmers. And some of that just has to do with the way, like the structure of the system. So I got just into rural issues reporting, into agriculture as like a beat within my beat while I was at my previous job. And during that time also learned more about the history of discrimination at USDA. I learned against Black farmers and other farmers of color as well. And, you know, learn more about Pickford versus Glickman, which was this big class action lawsuit Black farmers were successful in the I guess the first installment in the late 90s, 1999. And doing that work, you know, led me to CPI and trying to like not sound super wonky about it, but
no, get wonky here.
Go wonk.
And hearing a farmer who actually recently passed away, his name's Eddie Slaughter.
He passed away?
Yeah, he passed away like end of September. It just happened. Yeah.
Oh, man. Sorry to hear that.
Yeah, that, I mean, like, this story is so, it touches, intersects with so many issues that the United States has been the cause of and never the solution to. And it's the whole journey that you sort of take listeners on is really fantastic, because like Jack said, like when I hear people talking about big agriculture, I hear about big agriculture and factory farming and farm subsidies, but I'm like, yeah, I don't know. It's just like that one industry, like the government is the one being like, the money hose will never turn off for some of you.
Right.
And then really beginning to zoom out to really understand the entirety of it. Because in my mind, I'm like, it's probably like you just assume it's like it's probably like five companies doing everything when you lose sight of sort of what these origin stories are. And you go back to, you know, the early 20th century in Oklahoma and how a lot of these black farming communities were thriving, you know. And we've talked about like Black Wall Street on this show and just sort of the whole history there. But can you kind of just like sort of paint this picture? Because I think more than even talking about like we're going to talk about what's happening now, but I think it's really important for people to understand how prosperous black farming was in the United States to really get an understanding of like the tragedy that has been occurring ever since then.
Just to refresh people, Black Wall Street was Tulsa, Oklahoma, like this boom time, like all black or, you know, prominently black community where business was just thriving, families were getting rich, and because they're being left to like operate a community on their own without a lot of white supremacy coming in and, you know, using the tools of systemic oppression to crush them. And then people, obviously this is a simplified way of saying it, but like what white supremacy came in and burnt the town to the ground and like literally raised the community in Oklahoma. But yeah, totally a story that I didn't know was that not far away, also in Oklahoma around the same time, there was a similarly thriving rural community that you talked about, April.
Yeah, we talk about Boley, Oklahoma, which is where the main character of the podcast is from, Nate Bradford. And it was in some ways like a country version of that Tulsa. It was a thriving black community that was full of folks who came from the Deep South, escaping Jim Crow around the turn of the century and trying to, you know, get a piece of land and be free. And a lot of those folks ended up settling in Boley because there was a railroad that was being developed and going from Oklahoma to Arkansas. So it was just, you know, a good place to be. And that brought a lot of folks through there. So they settled, you know, in and around Boley. They were able to buy land, be a part of this community that was for black folks, by black folks. So, you know, answering to local government leadership and everything that was done was in the interest of the people who were there, who were majority black. And a lot of those folks, cotton was huge. So a lot of them were cotton farmers. Some of them were also in cattle farming. And Boley ended up, and they really, you know, paid for Boley, right? Their money was what was making the town prosperous. And Boley ended up being hugely successful. It had colleges, it had grocery stores, it had banks, it had what is believed to be the first black nationally chartered bank in the country, which is huge. And yeah, I mean, that ended up changing for a number of reasons, but Boley was one of 50 black towns at the time.
Yeah. And it's just so, so devastating to the central narrative of white supremacy, like the existence of this thriving town that, like, if white supremacists allow this town to exist, is able to thrive and have this amazing community. And also, like, kind of devastating to some of the central tenets of
like individualism and capitalism, where there's this, you know, we've talked about community action and how, you know, Black communities and, you know, Indigenous communities are some of the best models that we have of like how, you know, communities that take care of themselves and start their own, you know, circular communities. And yeah, so it runs against the central core narrative of the American mainstream in a lot of ways that are probably scary to powerful people.
Right. It's also like hearing about that era too, where, you know, these communities were thriving, and here, like, that the change came once, you know, like once statehood occurred, and now right. Oklahoma was going to be like basically get like the other states that were like enacting these Jim Crow laws. And now you had these communities that were, for the most part, able to do whatever they had to, mostly free from any kind of like racial interference, that suddenly now they're seeing segregation and they're seeing all these laws that are like are completely changing the way they live. What was like from that moment on? Because I think this is what becomes really interesting, too, is this is sort of like that was sort of like the height of things. And now we begin to see the deterioration of these communities and the dispossession of land. What was like, can after these Jim Crow laws were enacted, what sort of like the kind of next sort of beats that happen that are kind of that begin sort of this momentum even further?
Yeah. So Oklahoma became a state in 1907. It starts passing these Jim Crow laws, but Boley did thrive for a little bit longer. But then there were a lot of economic things that happened, right? There was the Great Depression, there was the boll weevil that chewed up the cotton, there was the Agricultural Adjustment Act in the 30s that limited the amount of cotton a farmer could produce. Those that were sharecroppers, farmers got money to help them through that, but folks that were sharecroppers may not have seen any of that money, and Black folks were kind of limited in what they could grow. So all those things led to the decline of Boley. A lot of the folks there and like the local historians say that even though there was this Jim Crow violence happening outside of Boley, not even that far outside of Boley, because there were sundown towns very close, right. Boley felt, you know, kind of protected. But it's still that fear, that violence that's happening just outside. All these things came together and encouraged folks to move on to other places.
Wow. And then, like, I guess, you know, part of like the whole, you know, the focus of this season is talking about just the decline and discrimination in Black farming and Black farmers have had to face. Can you, like, there's some pretty staggering statistics I think people should kind of like hear first, like, as we dive into this, is what was the state of Black farmers like in its prime as opposed to right now, just so we can give ourselves an idea of like how aggressive this process has been.
So around the turn of the century, when we know, you know, obviously coming out of slavery, there were a great number of Black farmers. And we know, for example, there's a study that found Black farmers lost $326 billion in land and wealth from 1920 to 1997, which is a huge, huge number. And we know that the number of Black farmers has dropped 67% since 1900. So that's a pretty big one now as well. Black farmers now are only about 1.4% of all farmers, so just a tiny number.
And that was not the case in it, like leading up to the 1920s was not like 1.4%.
No. Yeah. It was Black folks had, you know, we're much greater in number, and we're also, you know, significant landowners as well.
Yeah. And the way the government accomplished this is kind of a thing we've, you know, the systemic economic forces, economic racism, and it blends in more easily when they can just say, oh, well, you know, there was bad run of boll weevils or something like that, and not focusing on, well, in white communities, when there's a, you know, bad string of crops because of boll weevils, the government comes in and turns on the money hose, right? But in this case, there's just
a different standard of when to intervene and how easy it is to get government assistance, and then like what happens once you get that government assistance.
Yeah. I mean, obviously there's racial violence that had a part in this, but also subsidies, for example, are more helpful to farmers that are larger landowners or farmers who are growing certain crops. And Black farmers, you know, tend to be smaller guys, so they're not going to get as much money from those subsidy programs. The USDA, for example, is a lender of last resort, and that means you had to get rejected from other agencies, other banks, in order to get a loan from them. And there's this long documented history showing that Black farmers have had a tougher time getting those loans. And when they get those loans, they're not as much as they would have wanted them to be, or maybe they're delayed so that they don't come when the farmer might need it for planting. They come much later. And then that kind of has a chain reaction to it.
Right. And yeah, like in this telling of it, or just like this, you know, examination of the industry, you just realize that the USDA is doing some of the most vile shit, like in terms of disenfranchising these farmers or putting them essentially into like a debt trap to dispossess their land. And I know you'll never find a document that says this is our mandate as the USDA. But when you look at how the USDA was interacting with Black farmers that were looking for loans and things like that, it's just wild how so many of the people that you spoke to were sort of saying, like, the second I took that loan was basically the end, like when I began to rely on the USDA. And the hoops and things that people have to jump through just for the simplest things is really like mind blowing. Like, can you kind of just paint a picture for people of sort of how the U.S., like how this game is set up with the USDA, of how, like, because I think normal people would be like, oh, yeah, what's the problem? You get your loan. If you have an off year, you tell them, they understand, and then maybe they work with you to make something happen. But that really wasn't the case for Black farmers really ever.
Yeah. So like in the past, USDA had a system where county committees, who are like local farmers, would have a lot of influence deciding who is creditworthy. And so, you know, they could decide like that black farmer, for example, we don't want to give him a loan. Or one of the experts we talked to says how the county committee person could say, well, I have my eye on that piece of property that they have, and I know if this loan is delayed or denied, that it's only a matter of time before that piece of property will be, you know, out in the market.
Right.
So that was, you know, one way that affected Black farmers. Another is, loan officers have a lot of discretion in deciding who gets loans and who doesn't, and how supportive they can be when that farmer is in trouble. And there are farmers, older farmers, and then younger farmers like me, who tells us his story of how he felt he didn't get the flexibility that he needed from his loan officer.
Right. It's like, do you think, you know, like in looking at it too, because, you know, Nate, one of the farmers that you speak with, talks about how when he's asking for his loan to be restructured or something, their solution is basically like, why don't you just sell your land then? And, or like sell your cattle. And they're like, but that's how I make my living. So if I do that, that renders me like inert from a business standpoint. And like with that, like knowing that you had these sort of credit bureaus of like local, like landed farmers who are the ones determining who are like kind of behind the scenes, or at least had a seat at the table to determine who got loans. It feels like that sort of, I got my eye on that property sort of energy has just kind of persisted throughout like the decades following it.
I mean, I think we know for sure through what, mid-90s, because that's what Pickford was based on. Like we know that. The trickier question is, to what extent is this happening now? Like, to what extent has it continued? And people like me, obviously through his experience, feel like it has. You know, other folks would argue that USDA has done a number of things to try to rectify this, but I guess the we're still trying to figure it out.
Right.
Can you talk about, you did mention that there's racial violence that played a role in this over the course of like the transition from 1920 to the late 90s. Can you just talk about what that was, what that looked like? Because I think that's probably helpful when then coming into this and being like, and then this is a world that was like self-policing, where like the USDA just gets to use their own judgment to make financial decisions. But what was happening at that time?
Yeah, I mean, outside of the Deep South, I guess some would consider Oklahoma still part of that, but Oklahoma has like one of the highest documented gangs outside of the Deep South, traditional Deep South. And, you know, there's stories, Oklahoma elsewhere, folks kind of abandoning their property because of fear of racial violence from white farmers, white landowners. So, I mean, that's kind of outside of USDA, but that's something that's a function to dispossess Black farmers as well.
Yeah. USDA, I mainly knew prior to this for like grading my eggs and meat. It was like kind of my experience with the USDA. But truly, like, they've set up this Kafka-esque, like, just system. Like, there's one scene where they discover, like, that this USDA civil rights agency that they've been sending their complaints to, the office just, like, doesn't exist. Their letters have been just, like, piling up in an office somewhere. And when it comes time to, like, actually look at their complaints and what the USDA was doing, the court is just like, well, we can't use those letters as evidence because they never opened. Like, basically, the logic is, like, they never opened them. So what are they supposed to do? But yeah, it's like the judicial historical equivalent of like plugging your ears and saying, la, 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 I can't hear you. So like it doesn't count. But yeah, it's just a whole different level of like illogic and injustice that, I don't know, it was crazy to hear about.
Yeah. Yeah. During with the Reagan administration, that's when the civil rights office was like pretty much closed. So you had farmers sending in their discrimination complaints and they weren't going anywhere, right? Like nobody was reading them. They were just kind of piling up in a room that and nobody was monitoring them. So that was one of the things that really fed into the Pickford suit, that even when farmers filed complaints of discrimination, they weren't being addressed. There was no one to address them.
Right. And it's, again, like, it feels like the USDA is just like another example of many other agencies or institutions that, like, after decades of discriminatory behavior, they'll be like, oh yeah, it turns out we may have been doing some bad stuff. And then it just kind of feels like it sort of peters out there, because it felt like, especially when discussing the Pickford versus Glickman, right, is the case, that there was a moment for this to potentially create some kind of sea change, but it just didn't. And a lot of that, I'm sure too, like as you, like as the like reporting shows, like in the show, is that a lot of it too is also like by design, by like offering these farmers, like when the, like in a settlement, that it was just kind of like, pick your poison here, and neither are actually going to fully address all of the injustices that you had to suffer.
Yeah. So there was a settlement agreement. And so this case never went to trial. So farmers never had the opportunity to really like tell their case in court, but they decided on a settlement that didn't actually require USDA to come out and say, you know, we did wrong, we're going to change our ways, we're going to fire folks who were involved in this. Like, none of that had to happen. And the settlement offered two tracks for folks to follow. One of those tracks, basically, they had to show some level of paperwork. They had to prove some level of discrimination, and they would get $50,000. But they also had to show, like, that there was a white farmer in a similarly situated position, that they suffered an economic loss. That was supposedly the easy track.
Right.
And then there was track B, and that one, they had to gather more paperwork. They had to present it at like a mini trial. They had to show that their damages were greater than $50,000. And then they had to convince an arbitrator of all that, and they could potentially get, you know, a substantial amount of money. The farmer that we talked to, Eddie, says that the lawyers really encouraged the farmers to go with track A and not track B. And part of that was because Track A offered the possibility of debt forgiveness if they could find discrimination attached to the loan in question. So he argues that's why a bunch of us went with Track A, something like, I think like 2% or less than 2% went with Track B.
Wow.
And in the end, a lot of folks didn't end up, who went with Track A, didn't end up getting that loan forgiveness.
Mm. It's, that's what's like really harrowing, especially that when you talk about Eddie and, you know, the never ending fight with the USDA of how it's always him or the farmers trying to prove that they're worthy of these loans, that they're being left out, all the while that the USDA uses things like offsets, which is like this practice to say like, well, if you can't pay some of this debt that you have, we'll just take this out of your $50,000 settlement from the USDA. Mm-hmm. Like it just feels like never ending. And like the frustration that comes out in some of these people's voices, it's really, really like it's heartbreaking because at the end of the day, they're trying to do something as simple as just like grow things on the land and have a very simple life. They're not saying like, I'm trying to live outside of my means or do something extravagant. It's like, I like to farm and we're not given this opportunity. And every other turn, it feels like they have to constantly fight just to not have their finances whittled away at to the point that they are so destitute that the only option is to give up everything and give up land. And they all talk about how important like the land is. Like it's sometimes it's not even about the money. It's the fact that especially for Black Americans, that owning that piece of land is such a vital part of your longevity, of you being able to have something to give to your descendants and things like that. And that must have been so difficult to like, I mean, did you have I'm sure you had a sense of how like backwards this whole thing was, but like, did it just kind of make you more angry or what was that like? Because I like listening to it, I wanted to like scream half the time.
I wouldn't say it made me angry necessarily. I think sometimes when you're like, you're so seeped in it, it's sure. Like you lose a little bit of that. But I think folks like Eddie are so passionate about this cause. And I think farmers in general, regardless of race, are really attached to the land. I mean, it's a multi-generational life, right? They're not just thinking about themselves. They're thinking about who's coming up after them because they want the name to be carried on, you know, well after them. And I think the stakes are obviously so much higher for Black farmers, given everything that folks went through to just to hold on to that land with the violence and with the economic issues that they faced 100 years ago. To have it now is it's huge. So yeah, it is a sad story when we think about just everything that's involved.
Let's take a quick break and we'll come back and talk about just where you see things heading and where you kind of leave things at the end of the show.
You like to watch new stuff, right, Zygang? I know I do. Well, go to Hulu and see what's new. Because Hulu has new stuff all the time, like Vanderpump Villa, the new docudrama starring Lisa Vanderpump. Join Lisa and her hand-selected staff at Chateau Rosabelle, a glamorous estate in the French countryside, as they live, work, and play together 24/7. Vanderpump Villa is where first-class luxury meets world-class drama. And don't miss the new season of The Kardashians, starring The Kardashians, of course, and Season 5 promises new horizons for the entire Kardashian clan, and if you're looking for steamy streams, check out Grand Cayman Secrets in Paradise, the sizzling new reality show set on the tropical Caribbean island of Grand Cayman, where the rich come to play. But be warned, it's a small island, and secrets don't stay secret for long. So come check out what's new on Hulu this month. It's streaming now, and it's waiting for you on Hulu.
Enjoy all your favorite sports like never before at BetMGM. Signing up and playing is so easy. Simply sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. When you register with BetMGM, you can get instant access to a variety of parlay selection features, live betting options, and the best daily promotions in the business. And with BetMGM at your fingertips, every play and every game matter more than ever. Place your moneyline, prop, and parlay bets with the king of sportsbooks today. Sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets. It's if you don't win your first bet. That's right, up to $1,500. Again, sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. BetMGM and GameSense remind you to play responsibly. 21 plus and present in Ohio, subject to eligibility requirements. Rewards are non-withdrawable bonus bets that expire in 7 days. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER in partnership with MGM Northfield Park. That's 1-800-GAMBLER.
Hey, here's something you might not know about wireless. Sometimes what you see isn't what you get. But with Visible, what you see is what you get. Switch to Visible, the wireless company that makes wireless visible. Get a one-line plan with unlimited 5G data powered by Verizon, just $25 per month, taxes and fees included. Visible is the wireless company that makes wireless visible. No hidden fees, no really. Save on wireless with unlimited 5G data powered by Verizon. You don't need more than one line of wireless to save. Just switch to Visible at Visible.com. Save on wireless without the hassle. Switch to Visible today and save at Visible.com. Monthly rate on the Visible plan. For data management practices and additional terms, visit Visible.com.
And we're back. And has anyone, so there's that one picture of him on the beach, right?
Yeah.
With Casey, and it's like clearly photoshopped and there are no footprints behind them. Is that because of something to do with like, maybe his feet aren't even real?
He hovers. Does that make him a vampire?
Yeah, maybe he's a vampire. That's all.
Oh, I'm if saying. You're footless?
Yeah.
Oh,
yeah,
we can
get right on them feet pictures. I feel so terrible that I didn't actually put this into the document for us to look at. But yeah.
Yeah. Well, you know, I would be distracted.
What? He's got thick feet, folks.
Yeah. Thick feet.
We love ankles. A thick foot king.
Yeah.
Those look like the inflamed foot of a man who's been wearing lifts.
Yeah. And one of his feet is propped up like a Barbie foot.
He can't stop propping it. His calves.
Oh, could you imagine that foot is stuck like that? From overuse of the lifts?
It took 3 days to get the left foot like flattened out, but they just couldn't. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
He has extremely flat feet.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, hey, Ron.
Not anymore. Not with the magic of these lifts.
No, not at all. Not at all.
All right. We have an update on a story that we've been covering breathlessly. We're like, guys, stop stealing from Target. There's a theft ring that is putting them out of business. And it turns out that is bullshit.
Yeah.
What do you know?
We've been covering, like, I remember the first one we talked about was probably Walgreens in the Bay Area. They're like, oh, God, it's so out of control. And then it's like, no, your rent's too high. You're not doing enough business and you overexpanded too quickly and you're using this as cover. And now the latest one was like about a month ago. Target is the latest company crying crime wave. And they said, we're going to have to close 9 stores because they're shoplifting so much. And again, every fucking place. CNBC, Target says it will close 9 stores in major cities citing violence and theft. Wall Street Journal, Target to close stores in San Francisco, other cities citing theft. Bloomberg, Target closes 9 NYC West Coast stores to stop losses from rising theft. The New York Times, Target citing theft to close 9 stores. Everybody just took this and ran with it, okay? And sadly for Target.
The New York Times is the most liberal publication in the world. What?
Obviously.
What are you talking about?
I'm so confused.
I know. Their coverage is so to the left, it's right. That's how fucking wild it is.
It's crazy.
But like, sadly for them, Judd Legum's popular information team took a look at the numbers of the stores affected in San Francisco and New York. And guess what? These stores that are being shuttered actually had lower instances of theft than the fucking stores that are remaining open.
What?
How does that work? And then, but politicians, they only read the Wall Street Journal. So naturally, a few senators have introduced a bill called the Combating Organized Retail Crime Act. And that's really just more cop shit, right? Obviously.
Yes.
And they point to this statistic in their press release about why they need to act. Quote, organized retail crime costs retailers $720,000 for every $1 billion in sales. That's up 50% since 2015.
Damn, I'm in the wrong business.
Hey, wait, quick math though, Zara. You love math joke. And I know you're really good at math. What percentage is 720,000 out of 1 billion?
Three.
There you go. It's actually 0.07% of sales.
Yeah.
And like the group that they say they get the stats from, this lobbying group, the National Retail Federation, is the one keeping the stats. And even they admit they stopped recording these specific stats like back in 2020 because the numbers were so minuscule.
Oh my God.
And really, a lot of people are just like the Walgreens thing. Some people who are like savvy investors kind of looking into it and they're like, it looks like maybe Target is just trying to hide behind the theft argument to cover up the fact that their stores are just doing less business because they're poorly planned in the locations they're at. And maybe because the prices might still be too high. Maybe that could also be a thing too. But of course,
it couldn't be that.
Well, Target would be like, we're losing business because our shit's overpriced.
Yeah.
Well, and also for them to have 9 stores.
Oh, yeah. Closed down. Like,
and that's just the ones they close. Like, there's more stores that they have. I mean, it's poor planning getting together.
Yeah. But I've seen a lot of people argue about this story, too, where they're like,
people really buy into it.
People love to cape for retail stores. It's fucking wild. Like, there's a Twitter thread going on. I was like looking at people saying, like, if you knew anything about being in retail, you know that like law enforcement is so underfunded that they can't even do anything about it. And other people are like, have you ever worked at a store and had someone steal something? You never call the cops. You know why? Because they're gonna be like, the fuck you want us to do?
Yeah.
They're like, you should catch them?
Their response to most things, yeah, exactly. It turns out.
The fuck you want me to do?
Yeah.
Oh, wait, hold on. There's someone having a fucking mental health crisis. We're right there.
We're right there. Guns drawn.
But yeah, like it's So this like little dumb story keeps coming back all the time. It'll never go away. But keep your eye out for that.
Theft has gone up a little bit in the past 10 years. And that is because of self-checkouts. They introduced self-checkouts because it was a calculated risk that self-checkout would save them enough money that it would offset the losses they would have from people just being like, oop, missed that one, but okay.
Okay, everyone knows that self-checkout is where you go when you want to steal shit.
Yeah, of course.
Yeah.
And they know that too.
I'm not saying I do. I'm just saying.
Right.
Yeah. And also what you do is the person who's like the monitor, like the one human they have over there, you get good with them. You're like, hey, man, you want this? I'm about to come up on a London broil. If you want all this meat, I'll split it with you. And they're like,
okay. That's right.
Listen, I'm going to buy this boot lift.
Yeah.
Don't they're tell like, anyone about it. That's how my sleep deprived brain does things. Hey, I'm going to commit an act.
And they're like, I think you're here for your child's 3-month checkup.
Yeah.
Right.
Oh, my bad. Okay. Sorry. I thought I was in Target.
All right. There's a story from dentists where I appreciate the specificity of their they're really like just being like, we don't give a fuck about any other part of the body. We're good here. So an article this week, a dentist in Virginia implored kids to eat all their Halloween candy in one sitting because it's much better for your teeth.
Oh, hilarious.
It might upset your belly a little bit. Yeah, it might. To eat all your candy in one sitting. It might like put you into a diabetic coma, like literally. But I don't know. Every
kids
single year, dentist.
Yeah.
But this isn't like one wet, silly dentist. Like every single year, dentists give the same advice where they're like, I mean, if you're going to eat candy, like a big bag full of candy, you might as well get it out of the way now and then just go brush your teeth immediately.
Oh, rather than like a prolonged
multi-years
effort, like my weird bag candy vault would be.
If you eat all your candy in one sitting, you're exposing your teeth to that frequency one time. But if you're sitting there and you're eating it every 20, 30 minutes for the next few days over the next week, it's causing more damage to your teeth.
Oh,
that's a quote from one dentist.
I put it all in a bowl by my bed. And after I brush my teeth, I have one.
Yeah.
There you go.
I remember.
I do not use hands. Yeah. I just go face first into a bowl of I called it peeled candy. That's how much I use. I'm consuming vegetables and fruits. That the only thing I can say is peeled candy. Peel the wrap, peel the skin off my candy, and then just
prepare
go at it.
You gotta do the thing where you know those flat Jolly Rancher candies.
Oh yeah, those are like, so good.
You just put those on each side of your mouth before you
A little retainer. Yeah, wrap it around. Suck on it for a little bit and wrap it around both. So you have one in your bottom jaw.
Oh, yeah, top jaw.
And then it's
Or like you're going for x-rays and like that film you have to bite down on. Just take two Jolly Rancher, those flat pieces. Go to bed, folks. Yeah. Dentists love that.
Yeah. I don't know. I guess it could be argued that it's also not great for kids' teeth to have them bolt through a plate glass window in a sugar-crazed frenzy after eating an entire pillowcase full of candy. But I'm with the dentists on this one.
I watch a lot of true crime. You know what outlives you? Your teeth.
Your teeth.
That's right.
Yeah.
You know, after you've been murdered and manslaughtered, massacred,
whatever,
tortured by a serial killer.
Yeah.
How do you want your teeth to look to the whole rest of the world?
That's mainly when people are like, what am I going to leave behind when they're having existential crises?
Teeth.
Just your teeth. That's what you're going to leave behind. Yeah.
So you sit down, little Jimmy, and you eat that entire goddamn bag of candy.
Yes.
Do you think Do you think kids want to do that? Like, I know everyone's like, I'm going to eat it now, but like, I feel like there's always that sort of deferred gratification thing. Like,
yeah, no, he's most definitely kids would speaking rebel. To parents of kids with candy. Like, adults in charge of kids' bags of candy, right?
Right.
I used to eat all my niece's candy. They forget about it.
Yeah.
Yeah, they really do.
They
it's
don't
crazy.
Give a shit. They forget about it. After like 3 days, they're like, yeah, whatever, Halloween.
Oh, yeah. Jack, you dole fun. It? Do you dole it out?
Do I dole it out?
Yeah.
Or no, you they let forget, them, man.
They're in control. No, I'm saying, are they in control of their bag account?
No. They get a couple pieces on Halloween night and then like maybe one or two in like a couple nights after, and then they forget about it. Because they're also like, my wife raised them on the idea that fruit is dessert and fruit is the sweetest thing that you get.
Beautiful.
And so they really prefer fruit to candy. And I'm just sitting there being like, you suckers, when I eat all of their candy in a dark room.
You bunch of total idiots. I gotta be like, Dad has all my Jolly Ranchers in his mouth again. I'm going to enjoy this for the rest of the night.
Dad's teeth are rotting out of his head at such a rate that we can actually see it in real time.
I think I saw a worm come out of his incisor tooth.
That's a gummy worm, I think.
Let's get a diagram on this.
Yeah. And finally, we've got a great trend, a thriving subculture in New Zealand. There have been a bunch of headlines in the past week about how a New Zealand town has been plagued by drivers blasting Celine Dion ballads, which has turned people's lives into chaos.
Sounds to me like plagued is the wrong verb here. It should be enhanced.
Blessed.
Yeah.
Seriously, blessed. Yes. Thank you.
But yeah, it makes it sound like it's a prank of some sort, but it's actually kind of nuanced and beautiful. So there's this elaborate New Zealand subculture in which siren clubs have, quote, siren battles where they blare music on speakers hooked up to modded cars or bikes to compete for the title of Siren King to win.
Oh, yeah.
So this was happening with like bass when I was growing up with like cars with like
bass wars. Yeah.
Yeah, bass wars. But the difference here is to win, their sounds can't just be the loudest. They also have to be the clearest, which is why competitors, many of them of the Pacifica community, have been using Celine Dion because her music has high treble, which it makes it very clear. You can play it at a loud volume, and three blocks away, they just hear the voice of an angel sound out in the night, clear as a bell.
As if I didn't already want to move to New Zealand enough.
I know, right?
That's their biggest problem, is people blasting Celine Dion.
Yeah.
Well, and it's wild too, because it's not even like, even when people are like, it's a gang or whatever, they're like, no, it's actually like a really positive thing for these like young people. It's not even
it's
like
what they're doing instead of a gang, they say. Like the kids are like, actually, like this keeps me pretty, like it's like a fun, productive thing that we do together.
Right. It like, it reminds me of like how like in some cities on the East Coast, like they're like angry when they see like groups of kids in this like city on bikes and stuff.
Yeah.
And they're like, it's a nuisance. We're like, honestly, some of these kids, like, this is healthier for them to be, have fun together doing something like on a bike than, you know, getting into some fucking nonsense or get in trouble. So it's always interesting to see how these subcultures pop up. And then, like, I love that it's such a respect for the fidelity that they've had to dial in. And it's like Celine Dion is actually like, it's not even about the style. It's about, this is the music that helps us really determine who the Siren King is.
I'm just picturing like a bunch of teenagers. It's like that scene in Shawshank when like the voice comes over and like all these teenagers just like look up and a single tear like runs down their eye, you know?
Right.
Okay, what's your favorite Celine Dion ballad?
I mean,
The Power of Lerv.
That's a good one.
Yeah. I feel it has to be, right?
Power
I'm
of
blasting
Lerv.
That shit.
If so I'm not my heart ballad. Will go on?
That feels, I'm sorry, it feels
That's
a little
kind of, yeah.
Little played. Although I'm not saying The Power of Lerv is the, you know, like an original banger either, but
yeah.
I just feel like that would, if I'm trying to be a Siren King, I would probably try and win with that one.
I think you would win Siren King, Miles.
And, you know, thank you so much. I'm, you know, I am planning to just maybe make my way to Auckland to see how I can you imagine that fucking comedy movie about some dude in like America being like, I just want to be a Siren King, Dad.
Yeah.
Like, and making the journey to New Zealand.
Do it. Go. Live your dream.
Live your dream, boy. Just play,
what's
just
that
play
one?
That Celine
Dion. But he's trying to like bring bass music to the siren battles.
And they're like,
and everyone's
what?
Like, this fucking sucks, man. This is just
all,
like
it's
noise.
All muddled, man. It's yeah. I can't, no, this is not Siren King material.
If you kiss me like this,
ooh,
and whisper kiss. Like that.
It's all coming. All coming back. All coming back to
one.
Me now. Woo.
Wow. That one,
when it gets to baby, 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 oh, that's yeah. when you're fucking, that's when you just put your Siren King crown on. You're like, yep. Any other questions?
That shit's hot.
I feel like I Will Always Love You would be a fun one to just like hear again ring out because it opens with that long a cappella, just her, just Whitney, you know?
I mean, she's yeah. got lines like the flesh and the fantasy, folks.
Oof.
It's all coming back. When you said that line, it's all coming back to me.
There you go.
And by it's all coming back to me, I just could smell the backseat of my parents' car as that song was playing, and I was 9 years old.
Oh, I thought this was you making out in the back of your parents' car
yeah.
or something with a
no,
date.
No.
You're like, should I put the Celine Dion on?
No.
Set the mood.
Shall we
smooch to some Celine?
Damn, Jack.
Shall we bless the backseat with some Celine?
They're like, wait, can you take me home? Yeah, 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 yeah. Sorry, that was a big swing on my part. I didn't realize that would feel so bad.
Sorry, why do you have goosebumps all of a sudden? drop me off, Buffy. Drop me off up here.
All right, that's going to do it for this week's Weekly Zeitgeist. Please like and review the show. If you like the show, means the world to Miles. He needs your validation, folks. I hope you're having a great weekend, and I will talk to you Monday. Bye.
Zeit Gang, you like to watch new stuff, right? I mean, who doesn't? I do. Well, go to Hulu and see what's new, because Hulu has new stuff all the time, like Vanderpump Villa, the new docudrama starring Lisa Vanderpump, where first-class luxury meets world-class drama. A new season of The Kardashians, starring The Kardashians, of course, and Grand Cayman, Secrets in Paradise, the sizzling new reality show set in the tropical Caribbean. It's streaming now, and it's waiting for you on Hulu.
Here's something you might not know about wireless. Sometimes what you see isn't what you get. But with Visible, what you see is what you get. Switch to Visible, the wireless company that makes wireless visible. Get a one-line plan with unlimited 5G data powered by Verizon. Just $25 per month, taxes and fees included. Switch now at Visible.com. Monthly rate on the Visible plan. For data management practices and additional terms, visit Visible.com.
What kind of fun is waiting for you at Kings Island? The holy cow, we're way too high and here comes the drop kind of fun. The make a splash all summer kind of fun. The I can't believe I ate that whole funnel cake. Let's get another kind of fun. But most importantly, at Kings Island, you'll find for the fun of it kind of fun.
Don't wait to start your fun season. Kings Island is now open on weekends.